Writers Meg and Tom Keneally have done it again, interweaving historical facts with really just delightful, witty crime fiction. I don't know anyone who makes murder more exciting or accessible than the two of you. Welcome to Afternoons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Meg, we're looking here at Unmourned. I'm holding it in my hot little hands. You can see it's been picked through already. Aww. The Montserrat series is the name of the overall series, and this is book two. But can you take us back to book one and tell us where we've left off?
Okay, so the book follows the adventures of a gentleman convict detective and his friend, who is an illiterate Irish housekeeper who's nevertheless smarter than him and the real brains behind the operation. So one of our two central characters, Montserrat, has just gotten his ticket of leave for solving the murder of the commandant's wife in Port Macquarie. He fronts up in Parramatta with Mrs. Mulrooney, his friend, hoping for a quiet life, and those hopes are very quickly dashed.
The process of picking out the history and then bringing in the fiction and weaving them together, is this something that you've always done since you were a child, Meg, or is this something that you've learnt to do methodically?
Well, one of the things that's always interested me about historical research, and that's sort of been brought to the fore in my mind by researching these books, is how the really outrageous stuff is the stuff that actually happened. The mundane stuff is the stuff that's made up, but the things that you read and think, oh, come on, are the ones that actually occurred. So I find that whole process of doing the research, while it's something I haven't been doing since I was a child or anything like that, it's absolutely fascinating, because you pick up a document, you look at a journal or whatever, and you read it and you think, no.
Well, for example, even just the name, the Parramatta Female Factory.
Yes.
Tom, explain to us what that is. Tom, who has also been known as Thomas and Mick throughout his life, but, you know, the Meg and Tom Keneally on the front of this cover looks beautiful.
Because Meg does most of the work. girl.
Of course, I didn't explain it, but I've made an assumption here. You might not know, Meg is the daughter of Tom, and Tom's going to speak now.
Ah, yes. Well, the Female Factory is of great interest to the women of my family because they had a forebear in it. A 22-year-old Irish convict from Limerick, stole cloth in Limerick, or is accused of. We admit nothing. And she got a 7-year sentence. Breaks my heart, you read how late in their sentence some of these girls were transported. Mm. And you got to think, they're not being punished, they're being cleaned out. It's a kind of eugenics. But part of the eugenics was to separate the outnumbered females from the male society, and in a female factory. It sounds like it sounds the opposite of just in just 7 days I can make you a man. As if it's somewhere that crafts women, but in fact it's a place where women are detained and work. And they're fascinatingly, and this is just one example of the preposterous nature of the place. There were first, second, and third class women. Now, can you imagine categorizing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the third class women's section of the prison is still fully intact. But on top of that, it was a marriage bureau. And a ticket of leave man going bush would ride to Parramatta and inspect the young women.
Oh, it makes my skin crawl.
They had to agree, the young woman, but they had lots of motivation to get out of the place. And then speed dating took place. They had an hour or two to get to know each other, but that's all.
You've said that, and in the research for this I read, that 1.7 million people descended from the women who went through this Parramatta
Parramatta and the other female factories.
Yeah.
There was a big one at the Cascades, and there were little ones all over the place.
Mary Shields is the person for whom this book is dedicated. Meg, I understand she was your great-great-grandmother.
Yes.
Did you come across her records and her history as you did your research?
No, we already knew about it, but what was interesting to me is that Mum didn't grow up knowing that she had a convict ancestor, because my grandmother felt it was shameful and you had to bury, you know, any sort of link with convicts, you know, any sort of stain on the family name. So Mum only found out about it some years ago.
And there's nothing like a best-selling series to turn shame into a smile. We're talking about The Unmourned, Meg and Tom Keneally's latest book. It's book two in the Montserrat series. How many books are you expecting in this series? We haven't even spoken about the story itself yet, but how long is this series?
Dad wants to do 12, which I've agreed to. I've agreed to 12 because I want him contractually obliged not to drop off the perch any time soon.
Not so. To look at obscure penal settlements. Like the next one will involve a murder on Maria Island, which is north of Port Arthur, up the coast of Tasmania, and it's not a well-known convict place. Mm-hmm. The way Port Macquarie, where the first murder took place, was not a well-known convict station, except to me, because I grew up in the area.
Tom, the character who is brutally murdered in this series, mm-hmm. superintendent at the factory, Robert Church, not a nice fella.
No, and a couple of them weren't nice, or a number of them weren't nice fellas. They stole the women's food and they abused them sexually. And Meg can fill in the details.
One story which particularly struck me, as you can imagine, there are so many stories with these women, and these stories have largely remained untold. But one that really struck me was a convict who was so hungry because her rations were being split in half and sold on the black market that she ate weeds, as a result of which she was put in solitary confinement, tethered to the ground with stakes and ropes, and died of starvation.
Good Lord.
The administrative response to this was to increase the rations, not of the women, but of the superintendent, so he wouldn't be tempted to take the women's food. So
very often the story that you are telling here is about that negotiation of power and the unfair negotiation of
and
power.
And so the superintendent gets it in page one or two.
Yeah, quite early on. Peter Corris always says you need a body by page three, so I'm not quite sure whether we've...
And he gets an all in his eye, and Meg's husband suggested the book be called All in Your Head.
Yeah, oddly the publisher didn't go with that.
This process of writing, obviously it's a lineage that you've been born into, Meg. You grew up with a father, one of our finest writers, some might say, and I would be with them. What was it like as a child having a father who'd won a Booker Prize, whose book Schindler's Ark had gone on to become a Hollywood blockbuster? Tell me about that process and how it felt to be in that family home as a child.
Look, we didn't know when we were very little that there was anything special about him. We just viewed him as a story vending machine. We would say, tell us a story about two little girls in a volcano. Hurry up. And we would expect this perfectly crafted, well-characterized story with a very nice, satisfying arc. Otherwise, there would be trouble because you do not want to annoy a two-year-old.
So in a way, it was walked into your bones.
Yes. But this process, it was a country only he could visit, of course, it being a very solitary pursuit. So it's so wonderful to have the opportunity to be in the process with him now.
Tom, for you, did you ever feel that you did have to lock yourself away from family life in order to, respect the muse that was working through you?
Writers are peculiar people and they will lock themselves away to write a bad book rather than to relate to a good family. That is the fatal flaw of writers. Mm-hmm. And I found that with these clement little girls, I couldn't do that all the time. I couldn't get away with it. They were just stronger personalities than me. And with a robust wife, a wife of robust character, again, the writing had to be negotiated, because the other sin of writers is they tend to infect the whole household with their manuscript. Mm. If the manuscript's going well, they're sweet as syrup to their children. And if it's going bad, they don't want to even speak to them. And so these are the besetting sins of writing, because you do it on your own, it becomes the whole world. Nothing else is fills the horizon like the manuscript does.
Tom, I'm curious, and Meg, I'll ask you this question as well. I'm curious always about people's most productive, most useful routines for creating art. You know, there is some element of chaos always when we're trying to drag something out of ourselves. But you, at your most fecund, creative, useful, artistic self, Tom Keneally, what are the routines that keep you sane? How does that look on an average day?
The routine that makes me happy is beginning work at more or less office hours and working on what project is uppermost at that time. I've got Meg and I are actually writing a screenplay on the Irish famine at the moment. But I've also got a novel that I'm working on, which is the ultimate historical novel. It's about a man who died 42,000 years ago. Homo sapiens, Australian indigenous man, died at Lake Mungo, and a great Melbourne geomorphologist called Jim Bowler discovered him in 1974, and we now know that he's over 42,000 years old. And
As you're writing this story,
I'm working on that, and so it goes. So I need the day.
Yes. Monday to Friday.
If we're not going out, I'll work till about 7.
You pop out for a coffee during the day?
Oh, yeah, and
times?
Go for a walk on North Head. And indeed, Meg and I go for many bush walks to work on the screen, plot issues.
Just the act of moving outside gets the blood moving and the juices flowing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's terrific. We do a lot of that. I dragged Dad to the Blue Mountains a few weeks ago and made him do 2 10-kilometre walks. And
So there's a lot of time spent, you know, discussing the plot and so on. But then are you, Meg, responsible for going home, typing it up and sending it over to Tom for more discussion?
Yeah, essentially that's the way
it works. That's the way
I
didn't propose it should be that way, although I'm very happy to have exploited child labour.
I'm delighted to have been exploited as well, I can assure you. But a wonderful, you know, opportunity for me. But yeah, we initially toyed with the idea of doing alternating chapters. We tried it out, but it was neither here nor there. It was Dad's very strong voice with something else humming along underneath. So our agent suggested that I write the first few drafts and then Dad come in on the rewrite. So that's ultimately how we did it on the first one, the second one, and now doing it on the third one with, I might add, constant contact.
Yes.
His name's on the cover, so he's got a dog in this fight, so I feel free to bug him at any at any time.
And then we rewrite it face-to-face.
And so, Meg, for you with your most useful artistic routine, are you also someone who does the 9 to 5, 9 to 7, or?
Look, I would. Unfortunately, there's the day job to consider, sadly. So I work from 2 a.m. to about 7 a.m.
Goodness.
on a report on, you know, media and investor sentiment for, you know, a large company and that sort of thing. And I also work occasionally as a part-time scuba diving instructor, which keeps me keeps me sane. So once I've done that early morning work, taking the kids to school, the school hours is when I really hit it.
And you sleep when?
You're right, yeah. I fall asleep at about 8 and generally get up at about 2, yeah. So it helps focus my mind to actually have a finite number of hours in which to get it done, because then you just go for it. I find that momentum is very important to me, so I do need to do at least something every day, otherwise I'll run out of steam. So,
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation. I also want to just congratulate you. I know the television rights for this series have already been snapped up by December Media. Yep. That's quite a big deal. They're the production team behind the Dr. Blake mysteries.
Yes.
Now, if I were you, I'd just be walking around grandly, swannishly. Do you feel the thrill of this accomplishment, Meg and Tom?
It's very exciting for me to have a book with my name on the cover. It's something I'm not used to, unlike Dad. But what's the most thrilling part of it is getting to work with him and getting to, you know, wander around the country like this and have chats. And it's a great deal of fun. And it always astonishes me when somebody has actually read it. because I was sitting on my couch sort of tapping away in my little cave.
And
then somebody I've never met has actually decided to part with some of their hard-earned money to buy it and read it. To me, that's miraculous.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, I congratulate both of you. Thank you. Lovely to have you in.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Claire.
You two popular people, you. Meg and Tom Keneally, authors, the lot of them. The book is called The Unmourned. Again, it's book 2 in the Montserrat series. You can get it at any good bookstore.